Welcome to Supernatural Circumstances, the podcast where we take you down the rabbit hole into the fantastic world of the strange, paranormal, and the unknown. I'm Morgan Knudsen.
And I am Mike Brown. It's time to dim the lights and settle in. Come along with us on this week's adventure.
I am so grateful that we have done this show because this, I think, is the most important show that we've done, period.
We're going to get into things in this particular episode that resonate with both of us in a big way, and it is more the direction that, personally, I would like to see the show go, because we're talking about things that I have been fascinated with forever, in particular, NDE, near-death experience. And we have quite a guest.
Just huge. Dr. Eben Alexander, who is a neurologist and had probably one of the most highly documented near-death experiences in history, according to me, anyway.
Yeah.
But what do I know? But his experience has been the subject of a New York Times bestseller called Proof of Heaven, which then led into Map of Heaven, Seeking Heaven, and his latest book, Living in a Mindful Universe, which he co-wrote with Karen Newell.
Right.
And his story has been featured on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday and in many, many venues over the years, because his message is so profound with what he brought back from essentially what people would call the other side.
This wasn't just like a person has a heart attack and they are, you know, resuscitated minutes later.
No.
He essentially spent more than 6 days in this other realm due to a coma driven by a certain type of encephalitis, which is just mind-boggling. His brain was not working at all, yet he was having this fantastic days-long experience. It blows my mind.
But it is. It's an incredible story, and it's so relevant to where we are today, because the message that he brought back to me is not about some, you know, woo-woo thing that's irrelevant to us now. It is about finding our connection with ourselves, with our that inner spirit, with spirit in general, which is something that we desperately need in this world right now, is for people to feel empowered, to feel loved, and to realize that we are absolutely not alone. We are not doing this alone.
But yeah, let's get into it with Dr. Alexander. I am so fascinated and I am so excited to have a conversation with him.
Absolutely. Let's go.
On a night cold enough to freeze your bones, a prospector searching for a legendary cursed gold mine vanishes without a trace. I'm Crew Williams, the host of Dead Man's Curse. This season, we retrace the steps of fortune seekers looking for a motherlode worth billions who never came back. Join our quest June 3rd. Search for and follow Dead Man's Curse Volcanic Gold on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Well, this is wonderful, and thank you so much for being here today, because it means a lot to both Mike and myself, because we have such a vested interest, I guess, if you will, into consciousness and our own research that we've done over the years. So thank you so, so much for coming.
Well, my pleasure. And, you know, it's a topic near and dear to my heart. So I always love it when I encounter other people who are paying attention to the discussion. So
it has to be near and dear to your heart, especially with what happened to you.
Yeah, well, totally. I mean, it was kind of forced on me to come to a recognition of all this and an acknowledgement. But it's been one of the greatest gifts of my life, you know, to go through that. And who would have thought that, you know, having a weak and deep coma, almost dying from a severe case of bacterial meningitis would be a gift? Well, it was absolutely a gift. So
before we get into it, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background prior to your experience?
Yeah, well, I think it's clear, certainly from the story told in the book Proof of Heaven, you know, a huge part of my backstory is that I was adopted. I was put up for adoption,
me too,
by my birth mother at age 11 days and all that. But also, I was adopted into a wonderful, loving family when I was 4 months old. And the only kind of downside of all that was that my birth mother, who was 16 and unwed, when I was first taken away by social services for failure to thrive, she was not really ready to let me go. But they wouldn't let me go back to her either. So I was stuck in limbo until she finally, you know, signed the papers 4 months later. So I spent basically 4 months in a baby dorm. And those are 4 months you'd rather be in a, you know, a family. So anyway, but more importantly, I was adopted into a wonderful, loving family. My adoptive father, a world-renowned neurosurgeon, very influential in my life, but also of importance in this discussion is the fact that he was very scientific. He was a chairman of a neurosurgical training program. He'd been a combat surgeon in the Second World War. He was totally into science, but he also had a very strong belief in the power of prayer and in a loving personal God. And he'd grown up with that. His own father, a general surgeon in Eastern Tennessee, had engendered that kind of deep spiritual wisdom in him. So for him, there was never a conflict between science and kind of spirituality or religion. Now, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and like so many others of that generation, I grew up always knowing science is the pathway to truth. And I'm more of a scientist now than I've ever been in my life. But I also admit the frailties and the falsehoods of our kind of conventional science that's really a lot of assumptions that are not necessarily so. But we have an evolving worldview now that's very important, and it has everything to do with the nature of consciousness. And as we covered in our book, Living in a Mindful Universe, it's really about this kind of convergence of information from neuroscience, philosophy of mind, parapsychology, non-local consciousness, quantum physics, et cetera, that all builds into this extraordinary picture. And that's where things get exciting. But for me, when I went into coma back in November 2008 at age 54, I was still very much in a conventional scientific mode. And I had not yet realized just how crucial quantum physics was to kind of explain the full nature of this reality we face and how it ultimately is determined mainly from the mental realm and not the physical. Before my coma, in kind of a conventional mode, and I spent more than 15 years teaching neurosurgery at Harvard Medical School, thought I knew what I was talking about, but it was still very much about that conventional materialist thinking. You know, brain creates consciousness, our existence is birth to death, nothing more. That's kind of the materialist part. And yet that has nothing to say about the relevance of quantum physics and free will and quantum indeterminacy and all those bigger things that I have in 15 years since my coma come to appreciate and build into the model. I was a conventionally trained kind of neurosurgeon before my coma. I was open to things, as I point out in the book, Proof of Heaven, but, you know, when patients and families and sometimes nurses would point out to me some extraordinary kind of spiritual occurrences with people close to transition, I would always default to my materialist worldview and say, well, we'll explain this within materialism, but, it doesn't have anything to do with spirit. And then I've come to realize that the whole universe has everything to do with spirit. And we are spiritual beings united in a spiritual universe. That's the key part of that word spiritual. So anyway, there's been a tremendous transformation, 180-degree flip, that didn't happen immediately after the NDE. There was a long period of kind of assimilation and understanding and having to question everything I'd ever thought to be true. It's really been an extraordinary journey, but at the end of the day, it's all incredibly worthwhile. Because it's opened me up to a far grander worldview that is much more aligned with what I think is true human potential. And that's where this whole discussion can really get exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we want to get into a little bit later is what this all means, not just for the individual, but for people as a whole, to be able to take something away from this world of parapsychology, a world of spirit and neuroscience, and that understanding that this is all intertwined now, you know, that materialistic view is so it's becoming very outdated when it comes down to this new realm of thinking. And I mean,
it's not really outdated. It's disproven. It's, you know,
exactly
front edge of scientific investigation. Scientists who study consciousness no longer buy into materialism at all. They know it's false and has been disproven. In fact, you're probably aware there was the Bigelow Institute essay contest back in 2021. So anybody can go to bigelowinstitute.org and read the 28 winning essays. In fact, one of those essays makes the point that all the evidence was there, and this whole question of the afterlife was already settled decades ago, you know, but in a very different fashion than most modern, you know, conventional scientific voices would put it. So, you know, an important part of this is rejecting materialism, which fails, you know, at the experimental level in quantum physics and things like that, trying to explain the nature of reality.
So I'm sure you've told the story a million times before. So briefly, so it doesn't really, briefly, can you tell us about your experience, how it happened?
And I can make it fairly brief. Important thing to point out is that one of the most important hallmarks of my near-death experience was something I really haven't encountered in other NDEs. But remember that NDEs are always tailored for the individual. There's no reason for an NDE other than informing an individual's soul to help them better understand events in their existence. And that's, you know, in my case, a former Harvard neurosurgeon trying to understand the nature of reality, and of course, also digging deep into the abandonment wound from being put up for adoption when I was a young child, et cetera. Every bit of that is what has driven kind of a deeper awakening. But that amnesia is important to point out up front. And then I'll say that I went into coma very suddenly, very unexpectedly, November 10th, 2008, 4:30 in the morning, severe back pain, severe headache, soon grand mal seizures. And I was driven into coma right there in my bed at home. You know, there's this myth out in the lay press that this was a medically induced coma. Nothing could be further from the truth. It was a coma due to severe bacterial meningoencephalitis that afflicted all lobes of my brain. And in fact, there's a medical case report, Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases, September 2018, by doctors Serby Khan, Lauren Moore, and Bruce Grayson, that makes two major points. One is that the medical parameters of my case make it clear my brain was really in no shape to harbor a hallucination or a dream or anything. I was far gone from this world. And then second of all, the point they made is that my very survival was so unusual and unexpected, and that the explanation for that, when demanded by the peer review editors of the journal, they said it's because he had a near-death experience. That's why he was blessed with this miraculous recovery. So now diving deep into what happened during that week in coma, first this what I call the earthworm's eye view, primitive cores, kind of unresponsive underground realm, rescued from that by this slowly spinning white light that came packaged with a perfect musical melody, opened up into this rich, ultra-real gateway valley, which had many Earth-like features, many spiritual features. It was much more real than this world. Information flow in that realm, it's what I call knowledge through identification, where you become grander and grander aspects of the scene that you're witnessing. And it's this knowledge through identification is a very difficult thing to put into words when you come back here, because it's so foreign to our normal way of acquiring information. I mean, when you think about it, in that realm, that would be where life reviews would happen. They're very common in NDEs, life flashing before your eyes, but that's birth, death, everything in between simultaneously shown to you and relived, not just remembered. And not only that, relived from the perspective of everyone involved. Okay, now I didn't have an Eben Alexander life review because of the amnesia, but I saw life reviews in kind of a larger generic fashion in visions that evolved, and I'll get to that in just a minute. But in this gateway valley, I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing, millions of other butterflies looping and spiraling in vast formations. There were thousands of beings in the meadow below us dancing. This meadow was perfect. Forests surrounding it, waterfalls into crystal blue pools. It was a world of perfection in so many ways. In fact, I would say this is often, I use the analogy, it's like Plato's world of the ideals, but for the individual soul. But that's where we can live the events of our life, and in that beautiful light and love of that realm, you know, anything we did that looks selfish or greedy or handing out pain and suffering to others in the life review looks especially bad. And that's why the life reviews are such a beautiful kind of agent to kind of nudge us gently towards love, kindness, compassion, mercy, because, you know, how we treat others is what comes out in our life review, and it comes right back at us. So that was the setting of in that Gateway Valley. I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing, millions of other butterflies. I wasn't alone there. Those who've read the book Proof of Heaven will recognize I had a beautiful guardian angel, a spiritual guide, a beautiful young woman, sparkling blue eyes, high cheekbones, high forehead, broad smile. She looked at me with a look of pure love, never said a word, didn't have to, but her emotional truth and awareness came deeply into my own. You are richly loved and cherished forever. You have nothing to fear. You are cared for. And I cannot tell you how refreshing and liberating that message was in that moment. I'll never forget that guardian angel, you know, in her face and everything about her. Now, then everything accelerated into new levels. I remember the angelic choirs above that were swooping and emanating these chants and anthems and hymns that would just thunder through my awareness. That's what was fueling all the festivities and joy that I was witnessing in this valley. But they also provided yet another musical portal to higher and higher levels. And I remember seeing all of four-dimensional space-time in this material world collapsing down, all of that spiritual realm of, and what I call deep time, which is a whole different ordering of time flow that allows for birth, death, everything in between to be simultaneous. It's a much higher order of time. All of that collapsed down into this complex oversphere until I was out in what I call the core. The core was complete oneness, resolution of all dualities. You know, we live in a world, the material world is filled with dualities of good, bad, masculine, feminine, you know, all the different darkness, light, etc. But every bit of that comes into oneness in this this kind of universal source of love in that core realm. And in the core realm, that's where I recognized in my very conscious awareness as I became one with that force was due to that God force at the core of the universe. So in other words, I saw you're never separate from it at all. It's the very source of our existence. And yet as we come out and away from that spiritual center, of course, you get into all kinds of kind of issues out here near the periphery that involve things that appear dark and evil and all the kind of conflicts in life. And yet at that deepest center in the core realm, it was all that pure peace and God force of pure love. Very comforting to acknowledge that, realize that that is a common lesson in NDEs. Now, I would cycle through all these levels multiple times. I would spontaneously tumble back down to that earth for my view, but I quickly learned that by remembering the musical notes of the melody, that's what would usher me back up into that brilliant realm, always welcomed by the beautiful guardian angel. She became very familiar to me, but then always ascending to the core for more lessons. Every time going in there, told you're not here to stay, you'll be going back. And there finally came a time when trying to conjure up the musical notes, the melody to get back up out of that earth where my view didn't work. To say I was sad at that point would be an understatement, but I also knew I could trust that I would be taken care of. I had those beautiful sessions in all those spiritual realms to know I was deeply loved and cared for. So, and that's when I saw thousands of beings going off into the distance around me, heads bowed, some holding candles, murmuring energy. And the surprising thing was I was back in that kind of earth for my view darkness. And yet in this setting, surrounded by these beings, this murmuring energy was bringing me the same of comfort and love that I'd felt at a higher spiritual levels in this journey. And yet I was down in this lowest level and they were kind of ushering me back to this earth. And when I wrote it all up weeks later, I said that was the power of prayer that I was witnessing. And then there were six faces that appeared at the very end of the journey that were very important. They served as veridical time anchors because they were people who were present the last 24, 48 hours of coma. And there were many other people who had been present before who were not remembered by me. So that helped to show that the vast majority of the coma journey happened between days 1 and 4 or 1 and 5 of the 7-day coma. And that is important for the interpretation of the coma, et cetera, especially in light of the medical details of the case. But those six faces were very important. One of them was a close family friend who was into channeling. Now, if you'd asked me about channeling before my coma, I would have told you it's woo-woo nonsense. Mm-hmm. Well, Susan Wrenches was there front and center during my journey. She was one of the faces that helped me time all of this, but she was never physically present. She channeled to me from 120 miles away. And when I woke up, you know, and I was asking, what about these faces? Where's Susan? You know, I see everybody else. Where is Susan? They said, she channeled to you, but she wasn't physically here. So anyway, I said, that makes perfect sense. I had no doubt about that. Where I'd been is completely non-local and universal. So anyway, but it was the last of the faces that got me back to this world. And it was a 10-year-old boy. Turns out it was my son, Bond. Amnesia still powerful. I did not recognize him. I had no idea who he was. And yet he was pleading with me. That was day 7 of coma. The doctors had held a family conference that morning saying I'd gone from a 10% chance of survival down to 2%, now with no chance of recovery. So they were recommending take me off the ventilator, take me off 3 powerful antibiotics, and let me go. And that's when Bond heard that, and they'd protected him from the worst news. So all of a sudden, he knew things were much worse than he'd been told, running down the hallway, pulls open my eyelids, one eye over there, one eye over there, neither pupil working. Anybody in medicine knows that's a horrible picture. And I promise you, I didn't see him with my eyes or hear him with my ears, but his pleading with me got through. And through this entire journey, because of the amnesia, I thought this can continue, it can cease, doesn't matter. But now, all of a sudden, everything mattered. This pleading with me, I realized there's another soul out there. I have a responsibility. I've got to do whatever they're needing, but I had no idea how to do all that. And in that setting, that's how I came back to this world. But when I woke up in the ICU room, fighting the ventilator, they pulled out the breathing tube. I went, thank you. I don't remember much of the next 36 hours. My brain was still very much affected by the meningitis. And I was in and out of a paranoid, delusional, psychotic nightmare. But the important thing is that the memories from deep coma, when my brain was clearly very offline given the medical parameters, those rich, detailed, transformational memories are as sharp and clear today as if the whole thing just happened yesterday. The memories from that 36-hour paranoid, delusional, psychotic nightmare disappeared within weeks, so I'm glad I wrote it all down. But anyway, it took 2 months for all my neuroscience knowledge and other memories to come back. They were actually more complete than they had been before coma, big surprise to me, but more evidence that memories are not even stored in the brain. This is one of the major lessons of modern study of consciousness, that the brain is not the ultimate repository for our memories. But we need a much bigger worldview to explain it all. And that's what I and other scientists studying my case and others have come to over the last 15 years. So in a nutshell, that's what I went through.
Wow.
That's a pretty good nutshell. it's so interesting because I was reading through your books and whatnot. The one thing that caught me about the way that you described Gateway and the meadows and these pastel skies was that my great-great-grandfather, Albert Durant Watson, he's very noted in Canada. He was one of the original parapsychology researchers in Canada, and he was a physician as well. And he followed a similar path to yourself, where he was a complete and utter skeptic, until he ended up meeting a fellow by the name of Lewis Benjamin, who was a channeler. And he had a very low level of education, this guy. He, you know, wasn't very worldly. And when his friends insisted that he sit down and listen to him, one of the things that he discovered, or what was described to him through this group of intelligent beings, these entities that called themselves the Humble Ones, they described very much the same thing that you did. The pastel skies, the music, all of the things that you had witnessed. So that was very striking to me, because he was the same way. He said there's no way and whatever. And he ended up writing 2 books on it, because by the time he was done, he was like, this happened. This happened.
Well, that's what happens when you start studying the evidence.
Very
people
much
so. Going into deep trouble are those who say this can't be. It doesn't fit our theoretical models. So I don't care about it. It's woo woo nonsense. Well, those people are dooming themselves to ignorance and darkness, because there's a lot of great wisdom out there when you open your mind to this and start studying it. So that's a great story. I love hearing that one, that there are kindred spirits out there, other kind of former, you know, hardcore skeptical materialist scientists who realize, oh my God, when you pay attention to the evidence, it's overwhelming. And it wakes you up.
Absolutely, it does. And I think it will come up, especially in the era, because this was in the early 1900s, where at that point in time, everybody was going, this is absolutely nonsense. And if you were in the medical field at that point, I mean, and you got into this, I mean, he took so much flack from even just breathing in this direction. I mean, it's not too much different now, but at that point in time, it was just absolutely unheard of. And I think both him and you are talking about a very different message than what a lot of these TV shows and whatnot are trying to push, this sort of horror nightmare scape of paranormal universes. And that both Mike and I mean, we've experienced it in different ways as well. And that is just simply not the case. Right. You know,
that is not what's there. And it's very comforting to actually start doing research and talk with people who have been through this and their shared death experiences, you know, just like near death, but happened in perfectly healthy people. There's a tremendous body of evidence of how important all this is, including the recent work in hospice and terminal care by Dr. Christopher Kerr, a book called Death is But a Dream, came out about 4 years ago. I highly recommend it. It's completely about hospice and terminal care. But what they find is the very same things happen there that is described in near-death experiences. And the experiences that people have can be very wonderful and loving. They show that our soul connections persist beyond death of the body, that there's nothing to fear about death. It's actually a very beautiful story about our eternity of soul and that we're bound together through forces of love. I mean, every bit of this story is unfolding in a very positive and healing direction for humankind. And that's one of the important reasons that I feel getting it out there as a scientist is absolutely critical for our very survival.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And I loved in Map of Heaven when you talked about the idea that we are all metaphysicians. I loved that because I think so much of our power gets taken, or we presume that our power is being taken away from us, especially in the way the news presents things, the way society tends to present things. We come at this like, you know, you are being, you know, victimized by the world and there's nothing you can do about it. And what I really love about this information and just so many of the people, Mike, that you and I have talked to is that we really do have such a hand in creating our reality and what we are perceiving, you know, how we want to engage in this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, absolutely. Right at the heart of this whole discussion and this kind of scientific revolution around the quantum informed science of consciousness is this notion that we are truly, basically spiritual beings. And by spiritual, for me, the word spiritual doesn't have to involve anything religious, although some people have used religion very effectively to get into deep spiritual state. But unfortunately, the ideologies of religion can be very conflicting and often get in the way. And certainly whenever a religion is being used for warfare, violence, conflict, that religion is completely off the rails and destroyed and needs to be discarded because it's really all about love and compassion and kindness. But all the points you're making, this revolution in science is really about better understanding the mind-brain relationship. I mean, we all, mind is, you know, our mental experience of everything that we go through, our phenomenal kind of record of events. And this is where, and of course, brain and the physical world is another part of it. And the mistake that scientists make is believing that the only thing that exists are all these atoms and molecules and all the stuff in the physical world. And they even mislead themselves into thinking we don't have free will, because materialist scientists would scoff at you for claiming free will, because to them, it's like chemical reactions, electron fluxes in the brain. There's no actual will anywhere. It's all just happening to you, and it's all the result of the laws of physics, chemistry, biology. That's their very simple kind of walk away from that, and that's the end of it. What they're missing is what we experience is perceptions, and the perceptions are not the same as having the objects out there. They can exist in an information field, but not as the objective physical world that materialist scientists claim that they're studying. And that's the important thing. And so it's really more about perception and the notion of the mental and recognizing that all of the physical world emerges from the mental. And that's where you start to realize that we absolutely have free will. And for our current science, that free will is basically disguised as quantum indeterminacy, which is that the fact that quantum experiments, you don't have an absolute deterministic outcome. But there are systems involved that allow this whole thing to be more dependent on mind. It's what John Wheeler, the head of physics at Princeton, a great quantum physicist, he called it the participatory anthropic principle. But that we were, that this anthropic is that the mind of sentient beings is interacting with this physical world. And it's by how they interact with it, how they choose to measure it, what they tend to look at, et cetera, that actually then determines what comes out of it all. But ultimately, what you can show, as Wheeler did, is that there's this mental aspect that cannot be denied and is not simply an epiphenomenon of the material workings of the brain. And that's where everything starts to get far, far more exciting and very open-ended. But the science of this fully supports the reality not only of the afterlife, but of reincarnation. And the scientific study of reincarnation, for example, at University of Virginia over the last 6 or 7 decades, is very strong evidence. More than 2,700 cases they've investigated of children remembering past lives. And of those, 1,700 cases are solved. That is, they found the person actually existed that the child is describing. And we can observe that many children can remember past lives, but most people in our culture say, well, there's no such thing as reincarnation, so they don't pay attention to the children. But when scientists do and study what the children are saying, you find that, yep, reincarnation is absolutely part of human existence. There's no denying it. You know, you can say it's not so, but that just means you're ignorant of the evidence. But there is some form of reincarnation. Our souls tend to come back again and again. The other thing that makes it complicated is, as Ian Stevenson and Jim Tucker will tell you, they're the MDs who've been most involved with that work at UVA. And there are others outside of UVA, too, Carol Bowman, Jim Matlock, et cetera. But what they all tell you is you must harvest these memories before age 6 or 7 because natural processes cover them over. So most of us by teenage years don't have memories of past lives and between lives. They're gone. But a lot of young children do. And this program forgetting needs to be acknowledged, you know, to make the point, well, there's something going on with this universe and our experience of it where we're not necessarily meant to have all the knowledge of our higher soul as we live these lives in these bodies. You know, this is kind of an ego mind and a physical perspective that I live with, although, of course, I've been awakened to the grand nature of the spiritual nature of the universe. And spiritual, as I was getting to a minute ago, really requires only 3 ingredients from my perspective. One is an acknowledgement of connection through mind, that we're all connected through that kind of mental experience with the mind of God. I mean, all the way to the creation of the universe, we have that connection, but also shared meaning and purpose. So those are really the 3 elements of spirituality. And I think, modern religion can certainly open up to this, but the good news is all of us as individuals, sentient beings, have the power, you know, to explore consciousness. And once you realize that your consciousness is not simply, you know, an awareness generated in a 3.5-pound gelatinous mass floating in a warm, dark bath between your ears, but actually is sharing the mind of the universe, that's where it's, you start going, oh, maybe meditation and centering prayer could be more interesting than I thought. And I can tell you, I've spent the last 11 or 12 years meditating 1 hour or 2 a day. I use sacred acoustics, a form of binaural beat brainwave entrainment, which is a way of using sound to generate a very strong signal in the lower brainstem in a place that gives it great power to help you separate from here, now, and sense of self into much broader kind of primordial mind and sense of consciousness of the universe.
Yeah, I've had really great luck with the Expand app from the Monroe Institute and going through some of their gateway program and the processes
and things like that. And it's been a phenomenal journey using those binaural beats and those the hemi-sync technology right. that they have. It's been so interesting. And and Mike, I mean, you meditate you daily as well. You've been doing this for a really long time, and it's interesting to me how I think we're just coming into the knowledge of how deep this recognition of consciousness can be for people. You know, I think again, like many of the, you know, the TV shows and the media and the books and things like that are out there kind of teach us that this is something that's external, that it's not something that's internal, but yet the more that we ask, the more that is given. And I think people really in general, once you begin to ask, more gets shown. And I think you receive what you're ready to receive. Am I on the right track with that?
Absolutely. And it really gets right to the heart of the importance of belief. And I love how Soren Kierkegaard said, there are two ways to be fooled. One is to refuse to believe what is true. The other is to believe what is not true. Mm-hmm. And that is very much the case. And in our culture, most of our cultural beliefs are falsely restricting. They don't have anything to do with our true human potential. And this is where I think the science of consciousness is helping us to realize that we've really shortchanged ourselves and our materialist thinking, very, very limited and nowhere close to the real possibilities. And for example, when you start studying all this, you realize telepathy is a very common ingredient. More than 35% of identical twins have powerful telepathic experiences. I mean, so strong that if one twin touches a hot stove with his finger, the other twin 1,000 miles away might develop a blister. I mean, that is a tight physiological telepathy. And then, of course, you've got remote viewing, which is one of the most proven fields in the world of parapsychology, showing us that we can discern information across time and space. I love that story of how Ingo Swann remote viewed the blue ring of Jupiter 6 years before the Voyager spacecraft saw it. Things like that. I mean, we really have far more potential. And to just say, oh, no, that's woo-woo, it doesn't fit our materialist model, obviously does a disservice. So to open up to this, and there are scientists around the world who study all this. People can go to GalileoCommission.org or scientificandmedical.net. Those are two groups I work with, and scientists around the world who collaborate in studying consciousness. And it's all a very exciting time, but you know, people need to jump into the game. And also for individual seekers out there, there are plenty of tools. And I would invite you all to try out Sacred Acoustics. There's a free 20-minute OM download. In fact, Sacred Acoustics was shown in a peer-reviewed study to be a great agent to relieve anxiety. And there's tons of anxiety in our modern world. Dr. Anna Usom did a peer-reviewed study in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases on Sacred Acoustics, finding a 26% reduction in anxiety symptoms over 2 weeks versus only a 7% reduction in the control group that got standard talk therapy. That's a really powerful thing, and that was just by listening to binaural beats. I mean, Sacred Acoustics is a very evolved form of binaural beats, but amazing how much power such a simple concept has.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I loved in Map of Heaven, you talk about this in Proof of Heaven too, but in Map of Heaven, how the idea of being open was something that was so key within your near-death experience, and that idea of openness. What do you think that means for people here? How do you think that can push us forward?
What it involves is going within and exploring. And as you know, as being regular meditators, over time, everything starts to shift. Your whole kind of awareness of the world, your appreciation of the world, your way of seeing various elements of the world, seeing other people, the way you kind of consider them and your relationship with them, as well as any kind of shared sense of purpose and meaning. Every bit of that starts to shift over time. And you realize that bleak and paltry fiction of separation that is a hallmark of materialist thinking is not the limiting factor that they say it is, and that you have potential by going within to learn a tremendous amount more about yourself and others and about purpose in the universe. And I can tell you that my own experience has been one of seeing a tremendous positive change in the way I interact and relate with other people over the 15 years since my coma. And a lot of it had to do with some of the shift that I recognized just from the near-death experience itself, but a lot of it has also been developed through this regular process of meditation and, of course, studying this field. I mean, when you, I know Ken Ring, who is one of the founders of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, you can go to IANDS.org to learn a lot more, but he wrote a paper 34 years ago about how just people learning about near-death experiences have the same transformative positive effects in their life as for the effects on people who had NDEs. So those effects are very contagious. And especially what I can say is you don't need an NDE to come to the knowledge I have about this. By a regular practice of meditation, any of us can get there. And it needs to be effective. And any effective mode of meditation is absolutely going to turn off that little annoying roommate voice in your head.
Yeah.
That is not your consciousness, your awareness of it. Now, that's the deep mystery, and that's the part that you can start to develop through meditation, centering prayer, the different ways we have of going within. But, of course, ultimately, it's all about bringing those lessons, that knowledge, that experience, that emotional kind of piece of soaking in that binding force of love, and bringing it into our actions in this world. Because ultimately, the most important kind of lessons of near-death experiences and related discussions about consciousness is not what happens when we die. Far more importantly is how do we live each event, every moment and breath of this life better. And it's very informative along those lines to move away from that paltry fiction we talked about of materialism and that false sense of separation, which has caused tremendous toxicity in this world. I mean, in fact, the whole planet is threatened due to that narcissistic, egocentric, corporate greed, for example, in the energy industry, things like that. And this is about awakening to a higher sense of responsibility to each other, that we're all in this together. That binding force of love is something that's crystal clear to people who have been there, to near-death experiencers. More than 90% of near-death experiencers going back across all history, continents, cultures, many of whom might have been agnostic or atheist before, but more than 90% of near-death experiencers come back knowing, not just believing, but knowing in the reality of a loving, benevolent force at the core of the universe. Sooner or later, people will start paying attention to how important that is, especially as the science fully supports this kind of broader vision of the primacy of mind in the universe.
I personally had to have a big crash 31 years ago, almost 32. I was seriously addicted to drugs and alcohol, and I just wanted to die. So, it essentially what happened to me was I hit rock bottom, and that's what drove me to this form of spirituality that I practice now. And it's funny how, you know, even though it wasn't the classic near-death experience, it still has brought me into alignment with almost, well, I should say everything that you're talking about here. This is, you're speaking my language, you know? It's so refreshing to hear from Earth folks.
Thank you for pointing that out. And of course, as I mentioned in the book Proof of Heaven, you know, not only did I have the challenge of my adoption abandonment wound when I was put up for adoption, but also I struggled with alcohol, and I had to give it up back in 1991. Early in my career, it was never an issue at work, but on my nights off call, I leaned way too heavily on that scotch. And to me, when I look back on it all, I see that the fact that I was born alcoholic, that's the gift. And it was my having to deal with it. Similarly with my adoption abandonment wound, especially in the context of my near-death experience, but every bit of it has been transformative, healing, bringing me into wholeness. And I never would have gotten there without those challenges. So I have come to really embrace the challenges. It's a gift of desperation. Mm-hmm. That's what it's often called. This whole message is about helping people, realizing, I mean, addiction is basically a disease of the ego. And when our ego intoxicates the hell out of us, we're in deep trouble. And this whole discussion and revolution around the scientific understanding of consciousness has to do with showing that our ego is only a tiny little facet of our selfhood that has to do with preserving, you know, the body and taking care of the body and the self and those things. And yet, in our spiritual journey, the ego is a nemesis. It gets in the way. You trip up all the time.
Does it?
That's why it's so important to point out that little voice in your head, the ego voice, goes into timeout in meditation. And that's one thing that I've found to be very effective. Is when I go into meditation, I let Eben Alexander's little ego voice state a request, ask a question, what have you. But then I ride the sacred acoustics tones, and that little voice just goes away. I mean, those thoughts may still be active. I'm not even aware of them anymore. My higher soul has moved on to far richer territory. And that's where meditation and centering prayer can be so handy, because they take you out of the theater of the ego and its dominance, and the ego using fear and anxiety, the only tools it has, to try and kind of manipulate your life. But we don't have to be slave to the ego at all. And waking up to our higher soul nature, and the higher soul is a part of us that's interconnected with other higher souls and with that primordial mind and with all of sentience throughout the cosmos. That's a very powerful force to have on your side. And it's all about the binding force of love. There's nothing neutral about that deep kind of higher soul, which is what shows up in near-death experiences. That's why they come back so comforted by this. They've bathed in that ocean of love, in that God force of consciousness. And that is something each and every one of us can cultivate through meditative practice. So, you know, don't omit that beautiful time to go within and start really discovering aspects of self. And that's also where you find a lot of those jagged edges of the ego and its demands, and realize how nonsensical all that is. And that's when you can rise above it. So this whole world is facing a collective gift of desperation. And the more of us that can wake up to this in our own lives and seeing the power in our own transformation, but we can also share that with the world at large by living that deep truth and bringing that back to this world. And that's where I think the whole world will become a far better and more harmonious place.
It does make a difference. Just, you think, what's going within how is it going to help the rest of the world if I'm meditating every day? Well, I'm probably going to be nicer to everybody around me if I'm a little more centered and at peace. And I'm probably not going to be feeling as much levels of frustration at the little old lady in front of me at the cash register who is, taking time counting her pennies. And I'm going to be more patient and tolerant and kind. So absolutely, it does make a difference. And maybe just the smile I have for somebody else is going to make a difference in their life, and they're going to move on with that. Like, I mean, I'm not being egotistical, thinking that I'm just going to, my grin at somebody is going to, affect the rest of the
huge difference. It can change somebody's day. It can change somebody's life.
Yeah,
and I think that's so critical to get. And also, don't forget, I mean, there's been a scientific study, for example, in Fairfield, Iowa, with meditators, where they find that just by getting up to 3% of a community meditating, they had a dramatic drop in crime and in violence and in, societal mayhem. So and especially with the science of consciousness showing more and more the power of our will and how so much of what we experience is really generated from the mental, then yes, your personal experience, Mike, and your meditation, your kind of finding peace with the world is something that has a way of getting out into the whole field. And other minds will start picking up on that. It's not just when they see you smile. But this can have a very beneficial effect. And I think especially as more and more people around this world try to seek out peace and harmony, that's the change that we'll start to see in the world. Where we are in our mental space has a tremendous power on what unfolds in our kind of physical world and physical reality. So we should never underestimate the power of our will as sentient beings.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think in a dynamic that we have right now where it can often feel so powerless, it's so easy to kind of absorb that idea that we don't have any power, because if you know, things can feel out of control. And you touched on something that I definitely wanted to touch on as well, which was the idea that we are not alone. And I mean, that idea sort of gets, or that phrase gets sort of bastardized a little bit, but it really is true. And I know from you know, over 20 years of doing parapsychology and whatnot, and the research and the interactions that I've personally had with these types of entities, is that they want us to connect in. Like, they're waiting and wanting us to connect in. It's not supposed to be something that's, you know, out there that we experience, you know, if we have an NDE or we die. They want that connection now, and they're standing willing to help, willing to listen, all of that kind of a thing. Like, it's, you know, we really aren't by ourselves here.
No, we're not. And we have guides, we have helpers. I know I've presented with Lorna Byrne from Ireland several times. Beautiful, beautiful soul. And she's convinced we all have guardian angels with us all the time. And I believe that. I've come to recognize that in my own life in certain ways. And I think the more each and every one of us would take some time to get to know them by those quiet moments in meditation or centering prayer, and developing those relationships, that's basically what I've been doing with my meditative time for the last decade plus, is developing a much richer relationship with the various entities and guides. Discuss some of that in our third book, Living in a Mindful Universe, where I talk in particular about when I first encountered the soul of my adoptive father. Mm-hmm. You know, he had passed over 4 years before my coma. If I had scripted everything in my coma, he would have been there front and center as my spiritual guide. But as he told me 2.5 years later in deep meditation, he said that he could not be apparent to me during my NDE, because if he had been the spiritual guide, in spite of the fact that I had a 1 in 10 million diagnosis, E. coli meningitis in an adult, and a 1 in 1 billion recovery, I might have been tempted to dismiss it, even if, you know, it was way too real to be real. But if he had been there, and that's why it had to be someone removed from my knowledge of my life. Mm-hmm. And it was that beautiful guardian angel. And of course, at the end of the book, Proof of Heaven, I disclose how 4 months post-coma, I discovered who she was. And that moment still, when I remember it, it brings me just shivers up and down my spine, tears to my eyes, that beautiful recognition of my guardian angel and who she was and how she was so important to me in my life. And that part, from then on, that was the starting gun, because that's where I realized it seemed way too real to be real, because it really happened. It didn't happen in the physical world, but it happened in a much more real part of the universe for us as sentient beings. So what a gift to come into that.
Yeah, and that's what I would love for people to take away from this, is that part is the reality. You know, I think people think, well, you know, I don't know how much of this is true or not true or whatever. But when you really delve into this stuff, it is that piece of consciousness, that reality, and those planes of existence that are the reality. What we experience around us really is just a projection of whatever we've got going on. It's whatever, you know, we've created. It's whatever. And when we can understand that consciousness is the reality or truth, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, and that this is something that is malleable and something that we can shift and change our perceptions and all of those things, then that to me has been one of the most empowering realizations, is that aspect of it really is the reality, and that this is something that, you know, is almost fly by night in a way.
Right. Well, that's a very good point. And I think that's another part of the benefit of meditation, because in those realms, you know, you often hear that near-death experiences are ineffable, you know, beyond our language. Well, part of the reason for that is they're in an eternal realm. I mean, you enter in that place where you can have life reviews, and you've got birth, death, everything in between. You can have past lives, future lives, and you're witnessing all of this stuff simultaneously. It makes far more sense when you can see all that interrelationship than when we're out here living the narrative, you know, plodding along in the steps. So that's where that access to that, you know, mental space, the spiritual space, of deep meditation or centering prayer can be so powerful because it helps us connect the dots to kind of condense out a sense of meaning and purpose, to really sense the beautiful synchronicities and other pieces of evidence that we're interconnected and that the universe basically has a plan for us. We have free will to operate within that, but that all of this is a beautiful journey of discovery. And, you know, sometimes we tend to lose sight of that, especially when we're facing a lot of hardship and difficulty. But certainly one of the gifts of my journey and unfolding and of all this meditation is realizing that the hardships and challenges in life, illness, injury, things like that, in many ways are the gifts. You know, as we said earlier with the addiction, with the abandonment wounded by adoption and alcohol, drug addiction, et cetera, these are all kind of offer up stepping stones for growth and transformation. And I would say it's our free will response to some of those apparently darker aspects of life that elucidate just how much they engage us with growth, transformation, and positive effects in our lives. So coming to embrace the hardships, and that includes difficult people, because I came to realize, you know, after my coma, that people who before my coma I might have seen as my nemesis or my enemy, you know, because they were trying to prevent me from getting something I thought I really wanted or needed. Well, then with this reflection of my NDE and the time since then, I've come to realize that often they were near and dear soul mates, and we were trying to teach each other especially challenging lessons. There's that old quote from Confucius, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he says something like, if you find in someone else something objectionable, first look inside yourself. And that really gets at the heart of this. We're sharing the dream of the one mind. We're all participating in learning and teaching to help each other grow into this deeper and richer knowledge of our interconnection and of the potential for our growth. And that's why it's so important to maintain a very open mind about all this, and also to spend that time, retreating from this world, going deep within that spiritual world for meditation, but never forgetting that our spiritual growth happens out here. Mm-hmm. It's what we do here that matters for the growth of our soul. I didn't have an Eben Alexander life review, but I had two visions of life reviews, but the more important one to discuss here is what I call the Ender's Net vision. It was on a later passage through the core, and where I saw all these interwoven threads, and the interwoven threads were our lifetimes, incarnations. I almost saw it as breathing. You know, the inhale would be living a lifetime. The exhale was that time between lives. Then the inhale was living in next incarnation, et cetera. But this was all a rhythm going towards a golden center of kind of divine consciousness that all of sentience is working toward. And that vision was very, very powerful and helped me to kind of realize how all of us contribute to this. And that's why this kind of scientific revolution about the unity of mind and kind of the spiritual nature of the universe is so important, because it's a maturation of humanity to the next level. And it's interesting to note that some of the greatest wisdom that's coming out of this consolidation of quantum physics and neuroscience, philosophy of mind, transpersonal psychology, etc., is of that oneness and of that togetherness and of that kind of shared sense of purpose. And that's where I think all of this starts to become very liberating and refreshing. And I love being part of this revolution. But the good news is all of us are part of it. And also an interesting facet is that in many ways, some of the deepest truths we're coming to of oneness and the binding force of love are truths that were there in spiritual traditions going back thousands of years. So they were already on to the correct answer. In fact, when people often ask questions about early religion, and certainly I know from my own Christianity, growing up in a Methodist church in North Carolina, of course, that was a very kind of small, restricted version of kind of religion. And yet it woke me up to that beautiful teachings of love, that the kingdom of God lies within. I mean, that's a statement of idealism or panentheism, that God is right. And panentheism seems to be the answer we're working towards right now. Evolutionary panentheism would be probably the best philosophical description of where I think the world lies. But that God force unites us. It's all throughout this cosmos, and it brings us together. And that's why meditation, centering prayer, acknowledging this, and then bringing that love into our actions of how we deal with our fellow beings is so, so important.
Oh, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that's really such a big key in moving forward just as a planet right now, you know, especially when people are kind of looking around going, well, you know, I can't help over there and I can't donate to this and I can't donate. It's like the real change, the reality of the real change starts with us. It starts within. It starts making that connection. And because, like you said, the more connected to this we are, the more change we can enact. And when you're down in the dumps and you're kind of down that emotional scale and you're miserable or you're depressed and you're this, that, and the other thing, and you might have every reason to be, but you can't, that's not where your power is. Your power is up in joy. It's up in that meditative state where, you know, you are aligned with your inner being and, you know, you can take a step out into the world. And then I think that the steps that you can take within your own life and maybe within others, those steps become apparent. You don't have to go and hunt them down. The stuff starts inspirationally coming. And I know that's what I've found within, within my life and whether it, you know, be looking at paranormal cases or whatever it is that really is the key, is that just moving, getting yourself into that place. You don't have to look at the world and say, you know, I agree or I agree with everything that's going on, but making peace with where you are so that you can get to that joy and then make those connections with the loved ones that have passed over, make those connections with your inner being, and all of a sudden stuff starts to show up.
Well, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think you put it beautifully. I'll point out that when I did come out of coma, my family had spent 7 days with the doctors, this horrible prognosis, going to die, just bleak and dark. And then I was coming back to this world, and my younger sister, Phyllis, who came in about 30 or 40 minutes after the extubation, remember, she told me, and this is something I don't remember because it was in that kind of dark period where I was still in and out of the ICU psychosis. But she said I was sitting there like a little Buddha on the bed, and I would look at each and every person surrounding me, nurses, doctors, family, etc., and I would look at them and say, don't worry, all is well. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, all is well. And I just passed around to make sure everybody got that message. And she said it was so bizarre coming from somebody that, you know, an hour earlier they thought was destined to die, to be sitting there reassuring everybody all is well, was a deep message. And in many ways, that gets to an answer of what you've just been talking about. And that is the hardships, the challenges, the depression, you know, the negatives that we live with, et cetera, have a way of dissipating as we develop this kind of grander sense of self and relationship with higher soul. All the little petty issues and challenges start to line up and resolve as something that are there to help us. So all is well is a very kind of appropriate observation about what you're going through. And the bigger vision we have beyond the minuscule little ego vision can lead to tremendous liberation and sense of peace and harmony. So this kind of awakening and understanding on an individual level can be very powerful at alleviating all of those kind of negative kind of feelings, depression, suicidal ideation, you know, hopelessness. All those things start to disappear as we adopt this kind of higher soul vision of self, bound with others through love, with a shared sense of purpose and meaning, and all here to change the world for the better. Take care of others, take care of our fellow beings, not just humans. This involves animals too. They're a rich part of that spiritual existence, and we're all truly in this together. And that is one of the most beautiful and liberating and kind of peaceful parts of the discovery. And it has certainly helped me in my life to come to that sense of all is well, just through all of this work, the study as a scientist, experience, meditation, the work I do with other scientists, work I do with other experiencers and And then to work with people like you, you know, who do these beautiful podcasts, get this kind of message out to the world, because that's a very, very important function, is getting it out to everyone.
Well, that's what we're really trying to do, especially with this show, because, I mean, I've done, you know, my fair amount of television like you have and whatnot. And the more I did, the more I found that it just wasn't where the message was to me. And even though, you know, I was bringing as much of this to the shows as I possibly could, at the end of the day, it was becoming more about the fear and the scare and that was just not jiving with what I know to be true. And this to me is what I know to be true. And I mean, I'm so blessed to, Mike and I, you and I came together for a reason to do this, and they're 100%. And I've just learned that not one aspect of this is an accident. Not one.
There are no accidents. None of it has purpose. None. And that's why recognizing synchronicities, you know, meaningful coincidences in our lives are so important. Yeah. They're kind of a nudge wink from the universe, and they show us that in many ways the universe has our back. It's there to help us, protect us. As you said earlier, the guides are present. All we have to do is seek them out. But no question, opening our minds like this leads to a much greater sense of peace and harmony and prosperity for all involved.
I want to speak about synchronicity just for a sec. And that idea, because I had an experience, I'm adopted too. I had that same primal wound. I wasn't adopted until 3 months after my birth and all of that kind of stuff. So it's funny how, you know, we end up talking about this stuff and you never know when you're going to hear your story, you know, and here you are telling my story in a way, which is really kind of funny. But when it comes to my birth father, you mentioned yours had passed before your
that was my adoptive father who passed.
Oh, your adoptive father.
My birth father's still with us.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So my birth father, for years I had no idea who this person was. My mother said, it was the 60s. It could have been one or two of these guys, you know, like, I'm not sure which one it was. So we thought for years it was this other guy. And in the meantime, I go to PEI for Prince Edward Island for a wedding. Friend of mine's getting married. We go to a public place, and I meet this guy who my birth mom said, this may be your birth father. And I just met him at this public event, you know, that there is no way that, anyway... So he was the guy we didn't think was my birth father. So at that public event, I got to shake his hand and say, nice to meet you and all that kind of stuff, thinking this is not my birth father.
Uh-huh.
Years later, I do my DNA, all that kind of stuff. Somebody says, reaches out to me and says, oh, do you have these people in your family? I'm like, no. Do you have this person in your family? She says, yes. And it's like, what? So I've... The universe had already led me to my birth father. Wow. I had already shaken his hand and said, it's nice to meet you. And we had no idea of the significance of that moment.
Wow, that's great. You're so right. The synchronicities, it's a nudge wink from the universe. Pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I look for those in my life. I see them almost daily. If I'm paying attention, I see them almost daily. And I'm seeing one... You know, obviously now having this conversation with you, which is just mind-blowing because, like I say, I read your book, Proof of Heaven, early on when it first came out, because I've always been interested in NDEs. I've, you know, I read Raymond A. Moody's book years and years ago, and I've been kind of following his work, Bruce Grayson. I've read his stuff, and I've read yours as well. So I'm so grateful that we got to have this conversation here today with you.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's been a real joy talking with both of you. You're doing a great job getting this out to the world. And it's really all about people just opening up to this and you know, giving it a go on their own. So there's a lot of material out there. I would highly recommend you know, people check out BigelowInstitute.org to get more information on that. And people can stay in touch with me through evanalexander.com, sacredacoustics.com, And also, I would recommend Inner Sanctum Center, INNERSanctumCenter.com. That's a site that Karen and I put together. It's all her wisdom, but it has a whole set of interviews we did during the pandemic with all thought leaders around the world. All those interviews are there for free. It has a mental health practitioner course we did with Dr. Anna Yusum. And also, it has access at InnerSanctumCenter.com to a regular monthly webinar that we do for with our fans. So awesome. Lots of ways to stay in touch and learn more.
Oh, perfect. And we will have all those notes in the show notes as well and in the social media when it comes out at the end of April. And we'll have that all for everybody to click on, because as many resources as we can put in front of people, the better. And thank you so much for being here. And we would love to have you back if it's convenient for you at any time.
Well, that would be great. And what I'd recommend, actually, is if we do it with Karen.
Sure.
My partner, she's the co-author of that Living in a Mindful Universe, our third book, which is by far the most important of the books that I've written.
I want to dig into that more with you, actually. Yes.
Let's plan on that then. Just Elizabeth can set it all up.
Perfect. Awesome. I will send her an email as soon as we're done, and we'll get that going.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Great talking with you, and we'll look forward to the next time.
Yeah, whoa, I am having some weird, strange reactions to our conversation that we had with Dr. Alexander. I feel out of sorts because my brain, I think, is trying to process all the information that we just learned, and I need to absorb it, and I don't know, it needs to go somewhere.
Well, I think the more we raise our vibration, as Dr. Alexander has talked about before, and the more we are expanding into these areas that are new, this information goes against a lot of paradigms that people have and have had for a very long time. I think it is the uncomfortable conversation. Mm. And it's the needed conversation. It's the conversation that is going to deliver, I think, the alignment and the joy if people grab onto this material and use it. But it is a matter of giving up that victim mentality and realizing that there's empowerment here. Like, mm-hmm. we have the ability to step into our, you know, to who we truly are, which I think is a higher form of self personally, and utilize this information in a way that can it doesn't make what's going on in the world okay, but it allows us to understand that this is something that is bigger than us. There is a long vision here that we can attach to.
And we can be agents for change in our own lives. I think that is the biggest thing for me. I mean, you know, I am so situated that I am a very lucky person in my life. I have pretty good circumstances, you know. Here we're doing a show called Supernatural Circumstances, but I have pretty good circumstances in my life anyway, but it hasn't always been the case. And I think that's something that we need to get into in a future episode. Perhaps we should talk about how things, you know, about like actually overcoming things.
I think that's where so many people do get stuck. And I mean, I've been there myself. You've been there. Is how do you get from that place to where you want to be, which is in connection, you know, having these positive paranormal experiences, being able to connect in with loved ones who have passed away, you know, all of those things. How do you connect in with that when you feel like you're stuck? Mm-hmm. Because the idea of it is great, but the process is difficult. It can be difficult if you don't know where to go next. So that is absolutely the next conversation.
Yeah, you have to learn where you are before you know where you're going.
Absolutely. And I am so excited that we're doing this series. I am just so taken with the information that is being passed down to us and to everybody. And I absolutely cannot wait for the next one.
So thank you for joining us on this not so eerie expedition, dear listeners. It's been a great one for me.
Oh, absolutely. And remember, you guys, the line between the natural and the supernatural is absolutely a thin one.
There's no line. I think we need to change that because there's no line.
I think we do too. There is no line. Until next time, stay curious, friends.
Supernatural Circumstances is a co-production of Entity Seeker Paranormal Research and Teachings and Good Egg Studios. This podcast is part of the Curious Cast podcast network. Theme music by Corey Johnson of Catalyst Records in Edmonton, Alberta. You can learn more about Morgan Knudsen at entityseeker.ca and learn more about me, Mike Brown, and listen to my show, Dark Poutine, at darkpoutine.com. Feel free to email the show at supernaturalcircumstances@gmail.com.